When I think of St. Athanasius, I think for the most part, you're thinking of someone, he's been referred to as God's hammer. I mean, just someone who would smash heresy. And he was wielded by God in that way, such a fierce and ferocious little man. His opponents would refer to him as a dwarf because he was so small of stature. And he had very dark, complected skin, and he had a red beard. So he had a very interesting appearance. When St. Gregory the Theologian refers to him, he says he was angelic in appearance and angelic in mind. So here's this fierce little man with very, you know, determined eyes and a little hook nose and a red beard, and just not afraid of anything or anyone. And when it comes to destroying or rooting out heresy, he's just has this ferocity that's we can't conceive of today.
St. Athanasius is called by St. Gregory the Theologian the pillar of the church. Elsewhere, he's called the father of orthodoxy. St. Athanasius stood up against the greatest threat to Christianity to date, the Arian controversy. And yet, having been hounded by emperors, heretics, St. Athanasius never wavered throughout his life. At times, he was like a lone voice, a soul voice, with few who would agree with him, much less support him. And never did he waver in his struggle and in his faith. And that's why, indeed, he is the pillar of orthodoxy, the pillar that never crumbled. And he is the father of orthodoxy, producing so many works that would promulgate the true faith against all the works of the heretics.
St. Athanasius was born in 292 AD in Alexandria, Egypt. The significance about this is that he was also raised in the town of Nitra, where St. Anthony came from.
Growing up in Alexandria, St. Athanasius was in an early age introduced to St. Anthony, whom he later served.
He was an attendant of him and even wrote, "I saw the saint often and even poured water on his hands."
St. Athanasius wrote the biography of St. Anthony the Great, which details his life.
This had to have some type of an impact in his life because St. Anthony, being the hermit, a person of well known in that area, living in the desert, people would go to him for advice, confession, just to see him. And we know the struggles that he had, so this had to have some type of an effect on his life, seeing the life of St. Anthony.
St. Athanasius, like St. Anthony, from a young age, had a great love for the church. And one day, as the Archbishop of Alexandria, Alexander, was looking out on the seashore, he saw a group of children having like a parade. And he noticed that they were doing some kind of a ritual.
He said to one of his prelates, "Why don't you go down there and see what these kids are doing?" Well, the prelate reported back to the Archbishop, and he said, "These children are performing a baptism." Now the Archbishop is really engrossed. He can't believe this. So he asked for the children. And now he questions the children, "What's with this baptism? What are you doing?"
The children respond, "We have elected Athanasius as bishop, and we're doing a baptism." The Archbishop asks him, "What do you know about baptism?" And is astonished by Athanasius's response, which is probably even more in detail and greater than many theologians could give to him at the time.
The Pope and Patriarch, the leader of the Alexandrian Church, actually adopts Athanasius and raises him and nurtures in the faith.
Sometime thereafter, having seen the knowledge and the piety and the genuineness of Athanasius, Alexander makes Athanasius his papal secretary.
The position that was given to him by the Archbishop as secretary of the archdiocese was a very important position and gave Athanasius the opportunity to learn about the church firsthand from within.
In the year 318, Alexander then has St. Athanasius ordained a deacon. During this time, unfortunately, there arises in Alexandria a controversy centered around a priest by the name of Arius.
There's no doubt that Arius was a great nemesis of St. Athanasius the Great. And I think through that controversy, through that struggle, it built up St. Athanasius in his own personal life, in his own struggles, in his own transformation from an individual in this world to someone who is living a saintly life.
The problem with Arius, with Arianism, was that he was denying the divinity of Christ. He was saying that Christ was a human being, a mortal man, and that's it. So he was denying the divinity of Christ.
And that, for a real Christian, for a true Christian, especially one as St. Athanasius is back in the 3rd, 4th century, is something very profound, one of the basic dogmas or basic beliefs of the Church.
The Arian heresy was probably the greatest theme danger in the Church at that time.
Any distortion, like Arianism, or Docetism, or any of the first heresies of the Church, is directly, I think, you know, a byproduct or result of Satan having his hand in trying to divide and destroy the Church.
The evil one will do everything he can to make us believe that something is accurate, even if it's not. And as we're going on this road toward salvation, toward Christ himself, he will do everything he can to push us off the road, to push us on the sideline, maybe thinking that the road we're on is accurate, is the right way. But the reality is, it's missing the mark. It's amardia.
This was a very, very strong situation where bishop was fighting against bishop, priest against priest. The Church was practically being ripped apart because of a school of thought of one person. It was a very, very trying time for the Church.
Before that point, there had been so many different teachings and things. Some of the basics were there, but nothing was written down, nothing was concrete. With the Arius controversy, the Arian controversy happening, the emperor decides that it is time to put these things to writing, to establish teachings and rules of the Church, and he invites over 1,800 bishops to come to Nicaea in 325 AD to finally settle some of these issues, especially the Arian controversy, to define who Jesus Christ is.
The Emperor Constantine called the first ecumenical council, which took place in the city of Nicaea in the year 325, and 318 bishops came from the whole then civilized world, the Roman Empire. It's an amazing image, because they would have been told when to come. They would have been arriving by caravans and camels and from all parts of the empire. Athanasius, as we know, became very outspoken at the first council.
The whole landscape of the council is dominated by this little figure of someone sort of just looming over the entire proceeding and is really battling the Arians almost single-handedly.
Even though just in his 20s and only a deacon in the Church at the time of the council, Athanasius caused problems for the Arians in the council, because the Arians were very well-rooted. They were brilliant, and yet this young upstart rose to the occasion in front of individuals and in brilliant people like Spyridon and Nicholas and, of course, Constantine the Emperor himself, and shattered all of the arguments of all of these elder intellectuals. The result was the Nicene Creed, for the first time putting on paper the doctrine of the Trinity, the doctrine of Christology, Christ being both God and man. So you see, this is exactly how God works in very mysterious ways. Even though the empire was besieged by this heresy that was dividing families, it brought together the minds of the time to become united, to codify and to pass on one holy Catholic and apostolic Church, one universal theology.
After the Council of Nicaea in 325, Athanasius returns to Alexandria a hero. Arius has been excommunicated. His books have been ordered by the emperor to be burned. In fact, anyone caught with any of his books can be sentenced to death.
Deacon Athanasius returns to Alexandria after defeating the Arians in the Council of Nicaea, only to find that the archbishop, who he loved very much, was about to die and, of course, dies very soon after. Rallying around this young, influential intellectual, the people of Alexandria convinced the Church that it was Athanasius himself that should ascend the throne as the next Archbishop of Alexandria, and it happened. Only 30 at the time, he now began a life not only from the intellect, but also from the power of the position that the Patriarch of Alexandria had.
While this might be a great end to the story and a neat little tying of it all together, this is only the beginning of a series of banishments, exiles, ups and downs of Athanasios' career as both an archbishop and a theologian.
While St. Athanasios and Orthodoxy, the true faith, prevail at the Council of Nicaea, it is not long thereafter that St. Constantine the Emperor begins to rethink some of the actions of that council.
What happens is after the First Ecumenical Council, after 325, what you have is sort of the shifting sands, which are similar to the deserts in Egypt and other areas. And those people who had defended the notion that Christ is indeed the God who saves us abandon that position.
You can't just wave a wand and say, well, because the council says this, stop believing it, believe something else. So it's very difficult for them to eradicate.
Falling to the political pressures of the powerful Arians, Constantine let the proverbial cat out of the bag.
St. Constantine, now older in life, wanting peace, he's not a theologian, not understanding the intricacies and the seriousness of the teachings of Arius, decides to permit Arius to preach once again.
When Arius was released by Constantine, Athanasios was totally devastated because he saw what his struggle was, and now he has to struggle again.
The rulers of the time and the minds of the time, not to mention the Arians who had now a grudge against this young upstart, began to plot to demise Athanasius.
They couldn't defeat St. Athanasius in the court of law, so now they took the next step, which is rumors. And they started making rumors saying that he was crafting black magic.
Some of the more serious threats, at least serious to the emperor, was that St. Athanasius did not permit the export of grain from Egypt to Constantinople. In those days, anyone who ever threatened to in any way delay or stop shipment of grain from Egypt to the capital city was considered a serious threat to the emperor. So these people, these Arians who spread these threats, knew what they were doing. They wanted to seriously damage St. Athanasius' credibility in the eyes of the emperor.
It didn't take very long for Constantine to fall to the political and probably economic pressures that the Arians put on him.
Unfortunately, St. Constantine, although he's a saint, he's a human being, in time began to believe some of these rumors. One morning, as the emperor is returning from his morning daily ride, a figure darts across the road and pulls upon the reins of the emperor's horse, and that person is St. Athanasius. And St. Athanasius demands from St. Constantine some kind of reckoning, an explanation for why he has turned against him.
You can imagine this little man reaching up and grabbing the bridle of his horse and just stopping the emperor and becoming sort of embroiled in this controversy and not letting the emperor go until he had made his point, to make sure that they were understood, and it just, that's the kind of a person he was.
This time, instead of Arius being brought in front of Constantine, Athanasios is brought in front of Constantine the emperor. And the reversal happens. Constantine banishes Athanasios.
The suffering, the difficulties that must have been going on in his heart. For when someone has the love of God in them and they want to preach and they're not able to, it's a very difficult thing.
As Athanasios is leaving Alexandria, he states a very important quote, that we are contending for our all. Everything here is at stake. The faith is at stake, and we're not giving up the fight.
Throughout this period of his life, it's like a pendulum. He's banished, he's brought back, he's banished, he's brought back, he's banished, and he's brought back. And this goes on for almost 20 to 30 years.
From the time that Athanasius became the Archbishop of Alexandria, he was banished 5 different times. He suffered tremendously. He never gave up. I think it was a matter of his character that he was going to see this through to his end.
It's ironic that St. Athanasius was exiled numerous times in order to be shamed, but every time he came back from exile, the people of Alexandria received him with greater celebrations. Each time he came back, the celebrations were greater, the anticipation for his return, the joy at his return were greater, and therefore the shaming didn't take place, but the glory of God took place.
I think one of the most impressive aspects of St. Athanasius throughout this 30 years of back and forth into exile and back onto the throne of power of Alexandria is the fact that when he was in crisis, he turned to his spiritual father. He turned to an ascetic, to a hermit, to a person that gave him the counsel that he needed in his personal times of difficulty. And that person was none other than St. Anthony the Great.
Imagine the conversations that took place between St. Athanasius and St. Anthony the Great. The deep theological truths, the persecution that they've felt from this world, how to live in solitude, how to struggle against the temptations. They tell us that through Christ, all things are possible. And indeed, you see in this example of St. Athanasius and St. Anthony, their love for Christ, that through him, they transform not only themselves, but the world around them.
St. Anthony was almost like a corner man in the ring, that St. Athanasius would go out and he'd fight the battle first, and then he'd get back to his ring to get some spiritual guidance so he can be able to pick himself back up and go back out and fight another battle.
He wasn't going to stop. He wasn't going to rest in any way, shape, or form until he knew for certain Arianism was utterly defeated, and he was going to be able to rest secure in that.
Finally, one of the emperors of the time had enough. So he decides, I'm going to get rid of St. Athanasius right now.
The emperor sends his general, Syrianus, with 5,000 troops to forcibly remove St. Athanasius.
I think that really shows the power of Christ, you know. He can't take one assassin over there. He's got to take 5,000 soldiers to kill him. And I think it is the overindulgence of the emperor, too. Oh, we got to do everything in such a big way. Let's send all the troops down there and get this one guy, get this one priest.
And you imagine 5,000 soldiers outside wanting to storm the church and take him, and Athanasius is as stubborn as they are, and he's not going to give up the throne.
The general and his troops are outside the church. And of course, everyone inside realizes the threatening and dangerous position they are in. They plead with the saint to leave the church, to secretly leave the church. He refuses to leave the faithful. He says he will not abandon them in this time of danger.
Finally, the soldiers enter the church and there's utter chaos.
In the midst of that chaos, it's the parishioners and the clergy that carry him out of the church. They carry him out. He's a tiny man, and the troops don't even see that he's being taken out.
St. Athanasius then runs for his life. The soldiers cannot find him. St. Athanasius has gone to hide out in his father's tomb.
Imagine this. He's 70 years old, still running for his life, and the only place left to run now is to his father's tomb.
Sure enough, Valens gives up, permits St. Athanasius to return to Alexandria, permits him to be the archbishop.
Finally, St. Athanasius, who had survived 16 emperors and 5 exiles, gave up his soul on January 18th and received the reward of the heavenly kingdom and the knowledge of his job well done for the Lord on this earth and in this life.
Before falling asleep in the Lord, he probably was upset because he didn't have more time to be able to continue fighting the battle. I don't think he knew or thought that the battle was completely won, even if it was stamped out, if there was any sort of residue of it, any sort of remnant left of this belief, I think he probably would have wanted to stay alive a little bit longer and have one more second to argue. I think he probably would have relished having one more second alive to battle someone and to argue against someone to make sure they knew what the truth of the gospel is.
46 years, this great saint was Archbishop of Alexandria, a center of learning in the world. 30 years of those 46, he was in and out in exile. He went through 16 emperors. 5 times exiled. How many countless individuals that he affected in such incredibly important ways that ended up being important figures in the church from that point on. He influenced the church in profound ways. But maybe none so profound as passing the mantle against Arianism, because Arianism simply would not go away. But it had been weakened to such a point that by the time he passed the mantle on to St. Basil the Great, who became the next intellectual warrior of God against heresy to keep the church pure and on the right direction. Athanasius could die in peace because Basil took the mantle and finally buried Arius in Arianism forever. In fact, St. Basil the Great wrote, "He is like a lighthouse, seeing with ubiquitous eyes all that was passing in the tempestuous seas below. Treachery, stupidity, shipwreck. Like a lighthouse, Athanasius showed them the promised land." Within 5 years, St. Basil finished what St. Athanasius started. The Arian movement was defeated. The battle was over. Christianity won. Orthodoxy had triumphed.
Amen. Still as Yegonas Orthodoxias Theis dogmasin υποστηρίζον την Εκκλησίαν ιεράρχα Αθανασίε το γαρ Πατρί των Υιών ομοουσίων ανακηρύξας κατ' εις κοινάς αρίων. Πάτερ όσοι εν Χριστόν τον Θεόν οικέλτευε, δωρήσαστε ημίν το μέγα ελεύθερο.